So now you have a duplex, which is, mirror on the bottom. So you're making $15,000, $14,000, $15,000 a month on a single family, construction.
It's wild. That's big time money. I mean, it's like $1 million property right there.
Welcome to Real Estate Hackers, where you'll hear how real estate investors grew something from nothing.
Property management is going to become more techy. Our entire business today is based off of a hack. What if you could put $1,000 into an apartment building project on your phone?
With YouTube, with podcasts, you can catch up very quickly to a seasoned investor.
Now here's your real estate hacker host, Chad Gallagher.
Quentin, in the house, in the Real Estate Hackers podcast. Met this guy at the Bigger Pockets conference down in Orlando from Pad Split, kind of runs operations and has some other duties, and thought this audience would love to hear what they're working on. Super innovative approach to real estate. And I think a lot of people will really benefit from this conversation. So Quentin, thanks for joining us.
No, Chad, thanks for having me, man. It was super excited to get to meet you. I love somebody with good energy, and the fact that we're actually swimming in the same pond is more interesting, because it's real estate, from what I've understood and learned really quickly, it attracts all different kinds, yeah. So it's a really eclectic group of people and that participate in it, which is fun. So what is Pad Split? Pad Split is it's a prop tech company. If you wanted to talk to our venture capitalists and everybody else, it's a technology solution. But it was originally started as like very mission oriented. It was designed to address affordable housing. Our founder Atticus LeBlanc started it 5 years ago, and he's a real estate investor. But what he realized really quickly was there's a massive gap. There's a massive gap for folks that are working every day with a full-time W-2, but they can't get into good, affordable housing. So if you think about kind of where real estate for the housing space falls, you could make $40,000, $50,000 a year, but you still don't qualify. And the barriers of entry to qualify for a good apartment or to rent a single-family home is really high. So first insecurity plus, all the deposits for utilities and furniture and everything else, you're looking at a $4,000 to $5,000 bill. I don't know a whole lot of people that are making that money. They go to work every day, but they don't have 10% of their income just sitting around in cash to get into an apartment. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that he was a single family rental investor. And what he realized was what's old is new again, right? Like the days of rooming houses and boarding houses, the economies of scale work really well, especially mm-hmm. around inner cities or cities that have density, but they don't have affordable housing for the individual worker. Mm-hmm. So we created a platform, and it's a technology platform that addresses three major things. So I'll just kind of explain the platform. You, Chad, as the investor, are investing in a single family house. Average rent's $1,200 to $1,300. In our model, you could take a three bedroom, two bath, and it's like I joke that like if Uber and Airbnb had a baby, we would have Pad Split, right? It's like the simplest way of looking at it is we are monetizing underutilized space for the investor. So the dining room and the living room can turn into, you could put walls up and create bedrooms. And the individual renter has the ability to come in and pay $700 to $900 a month, all utilities included, for a bedroom that's fully furnished, that has Wi-Fi, that has all the utilities and a laundry space. And you're just sharing it with six other people that are in the same space. So our model is designed for single individual workers that are looking for an ability to kind of get over all the barriers of entry into good, safe, affordable housing. So the investors, instead of renting something and trying to chase down your 1% rule, they take that $1,200 of income and you're now generating $900 of room, so $4,500 of gross revenue. And it allows you to just increase the revenue that's created for your investment, but at the same time, do something good, which is provide affordable, safe housing for the workforce that are in the cities that we're in. 5 years ago, we started in Atlanta with an idea, and then now we find ourselves close to 9,000 individual rooms, so close to 1,300 or 1,400 houses across the country in 17 cities. What originally the thesis was that every major city needs this. You know, 10% of every city has an affordable housing problem. What we found is investors come to us and they take our model. And this is the beauty of entrepreneurs is this could work anywhere. You know, it can work in Branson, Missouri. It can work in, you know, Maine, or it can work in other cities. But for us, we've been really selective and strategic around how we've expanded. So we go into large major cities. The original joke was that if you had a pro sports team, you're a viable city for us. But then we realized that there's other cities that this is really useful for. We would say asset light. So we don't own any of the houses. We're just like a platform like Airbnb, where we handle three major pillars. We handle the member side. We call tenants members. So we fill the rooms with background checked, employee verification, income verified individuals. We do all the collections. If Chad had a portfolio of five houses with seven bedrooms, to collect 35 individual rents, and we do it weekly or biweekly, so we tie back to when people are paid on payday, 35 rents a week, it becomes really cumbersome. Mm-hmm. We handle all the collections, and then our platform and app allows for all the communication from the member in the house to the third-party property manager, or you yourself if you self-manage, in our platform and our customer service, which is 24/7. That's how, you know, we've been successful. It's strange to say that this economy is a huge tailwind for us. You know, the running joke is like, this is the summer we turn pretty. Where individual investors are looking for more revenue, those that have a wealth mentality or grow, you know, wealth building mentality, if they want to hold a property instead of just flipping it, we allow that to happen. They can continue to acquire single family residences, convert them to our model, and cash flow in a way that they can continue to hold the asset and the appreciation while positively cash flowing.
Yeah, man, I love the model. I mean, it's interesting. This isn't a new model. So I actually own a property in Baltimore that I rent by the room. Mm-hmm.
Which you're going to come to pet split at some point, Chad.
Yeah. I do have a bunch of questions, but it is interesting, you know, finding demand. In my case, the tenant, there's four rooms, and they pay, I think, like $800 a month. Yeah. And it is interesting. There's no shortage of demand for that. These are people who are in their 20s and early 30s, and they love it. I mean, they love living there, and there's continual demand, and there's more demand than if we were to, you know, rent that thing for $3,200 a month. That's a big price tag. What I'm curious about is, I guess my first question is, are all these tenants, are they on one master lease to help kind of self-police each other? Or is the agreement just one by one?
Individually, every member has their own member agreement. So what happens is when you sign up to join our platform, you have a membership into PadSplit. So fundamentally, if you are renting a house or a room in one part of the city, you're not geographically tied to the house for a year, which we found is like, it's an interesting hack, because the members that find better jobs, and they're mobile. So in Atlanta, we have almost 5,000 rooms in Atlanta out of our 9,000. Those members that get a better job in a different part of the city, they can transfer from one part of the city closer to where they work, which is, it's the proper use of what we're hoping our platform allows, is freedom of movement. And it reduces that barrier of geography that you're tied to this 12-month lease, where it actually costs you more money to get a better job and move up in your life. So it's a lot of flexibility for members as they find different opportunities, and they can leverage housing. It's not a barrier anymore. It's an asset.
Interesting. Presumably they could also switch cities. Like
you could.
Someone's job changes mid-lease, they just move from Atlanta to Baltimore or whatever.
We have a collection of truck drivers, which is interesting. So they joined our membership. They put their house, they're now a host. So their house in Atlanta is a pad split. They're generating revenue there, but it allows them not to have to be stuck in coming back home. So they have a membership in pad split and they will rent a room in Dallas. And then they will rent a room in Kansas City and they'll rent a room in Las Vegas. And it was interesting to see like member movements. We're like, what the hell's going on here? So when we talked to that member, we found out, look, this is somebody that figured out how do I use pad split to my advantage? And that's one of the ways he's done it.
That's crazy. It's a really cool model. I one time rented to a bunch of college kids by the room. And one of the kids didn't pay rent. And the issue was, while legally I could lock him out of his room, all the other kids kept letting him back in.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious, how do you police that kind of a behavior to enforce not just rent collection, but to enforce kind of everyone being the same page that we have to pay rent?
Human behavior is our number one challenge, right? Like, I don't know how I was always taught and raised like I can't change somebody's behavior. It's very, very hard. So we set expectations in the beginning. All members understand what the house rules are. Each individual person, if they stop paying, we have as the investor. So if Chad owns the house, he has to go down the same path as he would for a single family rental. So he would have to go down the path of eviction if that member stops paying over the course of time and they just decide not to pay, a la the professional, you know, tenants that you see out all over the country in many places, but like some of the horror stories you hear about in LA and Seattle and other cities, where they move in and they just decide to stop paying and they lean on to, you know, understanding that it's going to take that long to get out. So, yep. Individually, the property managers, and this is what I mean by we're asset light, is we encourage all investors to utilize a third-party property manager. Because as a platform that's virtual, anything that happens from a communication standpoint, we can address and triage really quickly. There's a maintenance issue. We hear about it much faster than if you were the single-family landlord.
Yeah.
So we can, you know, resolve for leaks and other things that cause expense side. But if there's a member problem, that's where we lean on our professional property managers to be the presence inside the house. So if there's an issue with a room or a member in room one, we actually have a protocol that, which is geared around member ratings. And if a member, you know, continues to get negative ratings, the host has the ability to actually issue a notice to vacate. If they decide not to go down that path, worst case scenario is that we will go down the path of eviction. The de-risking of our platform from a revenue side is that you have five other people that are paying rent.
Yeah.
So instead of being, and that's the benefit that you see for co-living is that you're never zero on the revenue side.
Right.
And that's kind of the, you know, the best case scenario. But to your point, a lot of success in our world is dictated around the community that's built. You know, the novelty and surprise to a lot of people when I talk about pad split is that our average tenure is like 10 and a half months, like nine, depending on each individual market. If you're a new market, tenure is going to be lower, like 6 months in Jacksonville, because we're adding in so much new supply.
Mm-hmm.
But in Atlanta, it's close to 9 to 10 months of tenure that people are staying with us. So what you end up finding is in a 7-bedroom house or a 6-bedroom house, 4 will stay and 2 may churn.
Mm-hmm.
So the community that's built by the 4 people that are there tends to facilitate a lot of, this is what the house rules are.
Mm-hmm. The rooming house has this horrible connotation in cities.
Yep.
And even with investors, right? I think that like the average investor wouldn't want to buy a rooming house. And so talk to me how do you work that through with the city to get the city on board here? Because I would think you'd have some regulation issues with 5 or 6 different people staying in one house.
Yep. So we typically work under the definition of single family. That's kind of the zoning issues that we deal with. Some of the zoning that's written hasn't been changed since the 40s or 50s. I know Atlanta best, so I'll address that. City of Atlanta's single family zoning definition of single family, it's 6 unrelated people, 4 boarders, and an unlimited number of domestic servants. That's how the single family definition in the city of Atlanta is written. So I could have 10 people and 10 servants living in a house and reside under the single family definition. The problems we typically run into with the cities are we have our NIMBY faction, right? Not in my backyard, people. And typically it's the problems you run across are operational, which is so silly to say that, like, if you're the investor and you have 7 people living in a house, if you don't look at it from an operational lens, like, it's not just buy a piece of real estate and put it out there. You're buying a business. You're buying an operating business that's happening in the actual house. So having the correct number of garbage cans, because in some of our high rent neighborhoods that we're buying houses or investors are buying houses, they're stray dogs. So if you have 7 people in a house and 1 trash can, a lot of garbage. So if you leave a garbage bag on top of the trash can and a stray dog comes by and rips it up and spreads it across 3 neighbors, you get zone code violations for garbage. Mm-hmm. Or if you're trying to cut corners and you don't want to, you know, mow the lawn every other week because mm-hmm. you think that those $30 are going to save you, mm-hmm. then you get code violations around lawn maintenance. Mm-hmm. So it's a balancing act between where do we pick a house that's best for the investor, understanding what the end use is going to be, and then how do we operate the house in a way that it's the best fit for the members and the neighborhood that's there. And that's the piece where educating people on the business of what we do is super important, because I've had scenarios where somebody comes to me and says, hey, I've got this $800,000 house in this HOA. You've got a Porsche Cayenne across the street. I can see it in the Google picture. You've got a minivan across the street and like baby toys and kids playgrounds. Do you really want to put 7 unrelated people in that house and not think you're going to get complaints? So right. Just being smart about where you pick a investment property that makes sense for this use is super important on the acquisition side. And then running it like a really good business that's best for the members and then best for the community that's around you. Those are the things that we try to really stress, and it reduces a lot of the friction we have with neighbors. Some cities are way more receptive to it. We have other cities that are just flat out against it, because the people that are county commissioners or on the city council, they don't want to hear from the people that are complaining next door because those are the voters. Mm-hmm. The irony is, so are our members, right? Mm-hmm. So in Atlanta, across the city, we have 5,000 voting members that we don't, you know, empower to actually have their voice heard. But we're working on that. You know, it's odd when a city says we don't want to allow for affordable housing, yet they tout a 25,000 housing goal for the year for affordable housing. And then they go down the same paths of, well, we gave this many millions of dollars for tax credits to this developer, and he gave us 10% of his 200 unit apartment. That's 20 doors. You know, we put on 5,000 with zero subsidy. You know, it's just you're going upstream, and that's
yeah. So I totally get your argument. I think long term you win, but you have seen things like Airbnb, which makes a ton of sense, and then you see cities like New York City say not interested.
Yeah,
you know, basically the hotel industry getting big enough there to push back. I guess in your case, you're not up against a hotel industry, so maybe you have less pushback from cities. And clearly,
less lobbyist pushback type of thing, right? Like less right. money push. Our model, it solves a human need, right? So we're kind of going bottom up versus Airbnb going top down, where they view it as an optional play.
Right.
For us, it's just a human need for safe, affordable housing. Like,
yeah.
since I've been here, I've you know, I learned all about the social determinants of health. Like, if you have safe, affordable housing, my God, you actually stay at your job longer, you know? So like the people who should be supporting more of this are the major employers for cities that want to continue paying $15 to $20 an hour. Where's that person living?
Yeah. Blue collar workforces. I mean, where else? It's an interesting point. You know, if your average member is paying about $800 a month, where in a big city can you live for $800? You know, just take Baltimore, for example, maybe nowhere. I mean, there's just not a lot of
utilities. That's the crazy part, right?
Right.
And the thing about it is every city, their lifeblood is to attract new businesses. And the biggest businesses that people are touting all over the country are these massive like distribution centers. You know, so the Amazon distribution centers, like all of these manufacturing plants that come in and they tout 3,000 new jobs. Well, they put them in these tracts of land that there's no housing. Yet we're flexible enough where our investors see that as an opportunity where they're acquiring single family housing, repurposing it and making affordable housing for the people that are working there.
You have some investors now who are, you know, the same way that people use the Airbnb platform to basically go acquire a property and then push it into Airbnb and other short-term rental sites. Are you seeing people start to now acquire properties with you in mind?
Absolutely. We are. So if you think about the people that are the gurus out on YouTube and TikTok and everywhere else, right? Their mastery is around the acquisition. So it is, am I going to do creative financing on the acquisition when the interest rates look like this? Or how do I find wholesale deals? And then the question is, you have to find some kind of revenue stream to support the acquisition. And single family rentals are no longer working. Not all of those houses make sense in a short-term rental perspective. So, you know, we fall into this bucket of medium-term rentals or mid-term rentals, right? The traveling nurses or the workforce housing or any other version. But our revenue model allows for investors to continue acquiring a portfolio with us in mind. And they are getting better at it. Like your second acquisition, Chad, is going to be better than your first because now you have a better nuanced understanding of the business. So you may be closer to public transportation or you may not want to buy a house with a pool. You know, like these things are subtle and nuanced, but like they make sense for the business that you're buying into. Yeah. And we work and live and succeed when the members who live in our houses have long tenure. It's just good, secure revenue for the investor. And it's a better experience for the person who's staying there.
If someone's considering buying a house, I think you breached on a little bit, but if what are some of the things that you encourage investors to look for, whether they use PadSplit or even if they're, you know, going to try to do this on their own, what are some of the things that you think or you've seen leads to better success? And then maybe on the other side, what are things to avoid?
We spend a lot of time on education. So I encourage people, even if you're thinking about our model, contact one of our sales reps, contact our get on our website at padsplit.com and just reach out, get the education that's available because the beauty of what we do right now is we have more data on co-living than anybody else because nobody else is doing it at scale. So we always joke that there's like a Air DNA version of what we're doing, like a PadSplit DNA version of data. So for the investors and houses that we have on our platform, we freely share that for now, because I'm working on that one. But like we freely share so much information on like where our successful houses are, what neighborhoods make the most sense, even from the acquisition perspective of like market rate rent looks like this. This is what our lending partners are asking for regular DSCR lending so that you can figure out where should I acquire and what's the expected room rate, what's the expected utilities, you know, what's my expected revenue after financing, all of that information we have available. So you can take all that information and then as an investor, you make your best choice on which property makes the most sense for you.
You mentioned like taking the living room, dining room area, kind of splitting that into additional bedrooms. By the way, for what it's worth, I've always been a big add bedrooms where you can to a property. The house I lived in Baltimore was, I guess, originally a two-bedroom. We turned it into a four-bedroom. We turned it into a rental. But I'm curious, so do the members have a place to congregate to hang out and watch TV in kind of like a living room type area? Do you make it smaller, or do you literally just say there is going to be no living room in this house at all?
We've evolved and we continue to evolve because of the investors who come to us. In the beginning, it was really hard to convince somebody to do our platform. So it was primarily driven on top line revenue. So 8 bedrooms, 9 bedrooms. Oh my God, every bedroom I add is $10,000 a year. So our original investors, because they had to understand, well, is it worth it? Is the juice worth the squeeze to be the first mover? We had a lot of 8, 9, 10 bedroom houses on our platform. What we found over time is we've had Airbnb investors that have taken their properties that have a living room. So like, I don't know if you're familiar with Sam Weigert and what he's doing in Carolina, big co-living, market leader there. He's a strong believer in having common space, building community in the house. Our model was always for every living room, somebody's got a friend who wants to crash in the living room, and it causes chaos amongst, 7 or 8 unknown people. So we've always, steered clear of having common space areas like a couch and a living room. Plus, that's an underutilized space that you can charge, for a bedroom if you converted it. So every house will have a full shared kitchen. There's an eating area. So it's like a little kitchen table. And even if you have 6 people in the house, it's not 6 chairs because 6 people aren't sitting down for Sunday dinner. It's people that are typically in their room with a TV or whatever the case may be. It's fully furnished. But people just spend the time in their bedrooms. They leave for work. They do their social life outside, but they understand the utilitarian nature of what a pad split is. It's $800 for all utilities and a safe house with fully furnished all internet and everything else. So we have an influx of work from home. So we have a ton of folks that are call center people that they get an internet, they get a desk, they get a bed in their room, and that's where they work. So people are using our platform how they see fit, the best way they see fit.
What does rent collection look like? What kind of percentages are you hitting? Go ahead.
We're plus 97% collection for rent.
That's great. I mean, because normally the rooming house issue is, can you collect rent?
Yeah.
I mean, the demand is there usually. Usually these things aren't vacant for long. There's more demand than supply. But the issue has always been a heavy turnstile and a lot of rent that goes uncollected. But wow, I mean, over 97%, those are really great numbers.
It's hard. And that's where California is a great example. There's a lot of shared housing and co-living going on in California. And we never really wanted to go in California because it's a really difficult market from the investor protection side, right? It's a very tenant-friendly area. The reason that we're being pulled into California is they're already doing the business, but they want to leverage our technology to make it easier. And the two things that really help on the technology are, can you fill my 6th bedroom when it goes vacant? And then can you collect the revenue weekly, biweekly, consistently? And because of the technology we use, everybody's a digital payment. And our collections team is probably the most bulldog version of it, is that if you're not paying, they're on top of it. And because we collect on a weekly biweekly, for the member base and the demographic we serve, that's where we find the most success, is that we tie back to pay cycles. Mm-hmm. So for somebody who's living paycheck to paycheck, it's difficult for them to go 1 month. And if you miss a rent payment, if you're 2 months behind, there's no coming back.
Right.
So like we stay on top of the payments, and then, allows people to budget more frequently, and it just allows for people to see improvement. And the ones that are, if you're intentionally living in a pad split with the intention of moving out for something better, my favorite member, right? Because they're budgeting, they're learning how to be financially secure, and then they're saving the dollars that they're saving to go on. Like last year we celebrated 40 members graduated into their own houses. And because of our model, a good bulk of them are house hacking. right? So that they can, better pay for that house and then build wealth. That's the North Star for us as a platform, is that that's where we're graduating people into.
Great. I think you told me your average room count per house is like 6 bedrooms. Just doing the math there, 6 times 8, you're north of $4,000 a month in rent.
So we collect 12% of collected revenue. So we're aligned with the investor. So if somebody doesn't pay or if a room is vacant, we just collect 12% of the collected revenue. So it's on us to go collect the rent from the members.
Yeah.
Two things, right? It's our quality of members is high, and improving, and our collections efforts are good and getting better. I love the mission, but like at heart, I'm a true mercenary. Like I'm a true believer in entrepreneurial spirit, but you have to get paid.
Right.
Like the idea of owning a property and somebody not paying for a year where I'm left on the hook paying, the mortgage and everything else, that doesn't make any sense for me. So our model is dictated on being good at the revenue side. I believe that we should be more of a fiduciary in that sense. Means quality members, collection, communication, everything else in between. It allows the hosts or investors to want to build a portfolio of these, where this is not the only answer in your portfolio, but it sure is one of the arrows in your quiver, where you're building wealth through real estate.
What do you think your average house would rent for on the open market? Like $2,000, something
less
like that?
Less than, typically, because I think it's changing. And this is what I mean by because of the economy being where it is, the supply is so limited, right? Like the last 2 years prior to this, it was a lot of headwinds. Because at 3% interest, everybody was buying single families. Like we had individual investors. So Chad, the investor, was competing against, every hedge fund that was accumulating B and C real estate, single family. And it was hard to get supply. Mm-hmm. So as the economy changed, interest rates went up. A lot of people didn't have exits. So now we're seeing a big influx of those fix and flip investors that are now converting into fix and hold, using our lending partners to get 30-year debt on it, realizing the cash flow is there. And now they're building, one out of every two, one out of every three flips are turning into holds for them where they're cash flowing. That was a big one for us. And then the Airbnb movement right now, if you're under revenue on what your projections were, it may not be 150 a night, 200, 400 a night, but these same investors are converting those houses. They're not even converting the house, some of them. 4 or 5 bedroom houses, it's fully furnished. They're just changing platforms. And that's, bringing in this next tier of quality. So when I say it's like Uber, that's what I mean. It started as base Uber, and then there's like Uber Black and Uber Share and different SKUs up and down the portfolio. It's real. It's viable.
You charge the same amount of rent, if it's a B-class house versus C-class house.
We don't dictate rent. You as the investor control pricing. We can give you all of the supporting data that says average market rate is this for this comp type of room.
Yep.
You as the investor, if you have a better experience and a better property manager and you supply, instead of a 6-inch mattress or a better mattress, we have investors that go down the path of like, I wouldn't put it on there if I wouldn't live there.
Yeah.
So they have rooms with TVs and rooms with memory foam mattresses and a mini fridge. They're charging a premium for that. The members that are coming in are paying $200 to $220. The magic unlock that a lot of people realize in their second properties is bathrooms are key. If you wanted to put a capital investment into the renovation, add a bathroom. The people that are adding more bathrooms, if average market rate rent in Atlanta is like $177 a week, the average room with an ensuite bathroom is like $250. So that capital expense is an 8-month return on investment that you now have for years. Is if you can have ensuite bathrooms, and this is where like ground up construction is super interesting in our model, where we have some investors that are building 8 bedroom, six bathroom houses. So five bedrooms have their own ensuite bathroom, and the front three or the front two share. And then there's one common space, like, which is like an office setting. That's it. We have one investor that built a duplex, an 8-6 over an 8-6 on a major public transit line. That's a massive return. If you're averaging 250 a room for five bedrooms and 185 or something.
Right, you're saying 250 a week. So it ends up being $1,000 a room times eight. Like, wow, you could make in, you know, and even taking your fees off of that, your top line income is like approaching $7,000 potentially.
That's just the one floor. So now you have a duplex, which is, you know, mirror on the bottom. So you're making $15,000, $14,000, $15,000 a month on a single family, you know, construction.
Yeah. It's wild. That's big time money. I mean, it's like $1 million property right there.
So, you know, like the thing that is evolving, which is amazing, is that as we continue to grow, the people that we're touching, and this is kind of like, you know, the pad split of 2025, 2024, partnerships with employers, partnerships with technological schools or like trade schools where they have a housing problem for their students because their schools only run 7 to 10 months. Who's got 7 to 10 month leases? We do because we provide that flexibility, right? And then that same person, and I'm using this because we have a welding school that and an HVAC school that we partner with in Jacksonville. Those same students have like a 96% placement rate. So when they get paid on their first job, instead of going to, you know, spend 50% of their income on an apartment, they continue to live in a pad split, save dollars until they can buy a house. It's just an unlock as a different option for housing for so many different people.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I think it's really exciting. I mean, it'll be interesting. I feel like Airbnb was exciting at first. And then the cities did start to have some pushback. Neighborhoods had pushback. Do you think 2024, 2025, you may start hitting enough mass that you do see some pushback more than you have now?
I think it's going to be interesting. So it's going to go one of two ways. The cities are either going to partner with us. I'll use Baltimore as an example because we're in Baltimore, right? Baltimore, if unlike any other city that I've dealt with at Pat Split, is street by street. You know, like you can invest one street and be golden. You're down one block and it's a completely different neighborhood. Let's just put
100%, 100%.
So imagine partnering with the city that says, I have 100, let's say I have 500 investors that want to go and they like the returns that a Baltimore model underwrites at. We can collaborate with our owners to take down an entire block. So instead of waiting for the regular economy and individual investors to rehab one house at a time, we can take out that entire fire blown out neighborhood block and turn entire city blocks into affordable housing. Like that's the model that I think is amazing for a city like Baltimore. You know, in Atlanta and other metros, the city developers that are attracting employees and companies, when they say we have 5,000 jobs, the things that the companies ask for is what's the education, what's the employment rate, what's the housing. The cities can partner with us to say, look, we have an agile partner that will go and put affordable housing close to your facility where it makes it easier for you to, as an operating company, to hire, keep, and retain because they have safe, affordable housing close to the facility. That's where I'm hoping that future state goes to. And then, you know, as a platform, this is me talking, not the company, not anything else. But like as a platform, there's so many people and investors that are doing sober living or, you know, crash pads, anything that's density inside of a house. Yeah. Our platform is agile enough that eventually that will evolve into that space.
Yeah, it's great. So Baltimore, is a city that we just visited. So are you now live? Operating?
We're live in Baltimore. And the interesting thing about Baltimore, first of all, I didn't even know you guys called yourself Delmarva. People were saying that to me. I was like, Del who? Del what? You know, I didn't even know that was a thing. But Baltimore, I actually love Baltimore because you won't fight as an investor city ordinances, because the assets that are there limit themselves in what they can become, right? So up and down the row houses in Baltimore, you can acquire a distressed property at $50,000 and then renovate it for $60,000. And then your ARV for that house may be $150,000. So all your numbers and underwriting make sense. Some of our investors, they get our model. So typical townhouse in Baltimore, the kitchen's in the back. You walk in the front, there's a living room. You go upstairs, there's two bedrooms and a bathroom in the middle. That's a standard Baltimore. Our investors are moving the kitchen to the middle on the reno. And now you have a private entrance room in the back of the house. You have a room in the front of the house. And upstairs, you have two bedrooms. So your $1,200, $1,300 single family rental renovated is now yielding $4,000, you know, $3,600. That's a rinse and repeat model that you can do project over project, and build a portfolio of those that you're getting good solid cash flow.
Yeah, it's awesome. And no pushback. I thought the city of Baltimore had a rule of like five is there
the magic number. So that's where, like, you know, I walked a property in Bel Air Edison. Does that ring a bell? Right. Yeah. So that's a neighborhood. And I love Bel Air Edison because on the upstairs, the middle bedroom has a window. So it allows for five bedrooms instead of four. So it's, I love the assets that are in Baltimore. I think that
you need egress from each room. Is that how you kind of
So we have to follow the same building and fire codes as everybody else. So we're looking for a natural egress out. So a door or a window that meets the specs. And in Baltimore, you have that. Like the conversions of properties in Baltimore as a shell is super easy. Like, I love markets that we're not in yet. Like, we're coming, Milwaukee. We're coming as, like, they call them the Polish flats, right? These duplexes that are built and designed for multi-generational living. Yeah. That's completely our model, right? Yeah. So if it's a 3-2 split level duplex, that's a 6-2-6-2.
Are there any cities that they think will never go for this? Like, could this be in New York City? Could this be in Philadelphia?
So they have them right now. Like, Common is and Habit is, their model is to take down entire, apartment complexes and then add in additional bedrooms, and they're doing it at that level. We're not there yet. We haven't, we have several instances, one-offs of big, like, multifamilies, but the asset itself has to make sense. Mm-hmm. Like, the apartment building has to be big enough where the unit economics makes sense for you to add in density to the room. And there are certain cities that were some of the builds are just way more conducive. There are some cities that are more limiting. Like, Florida is one of our fastest growing markets. We're in Jacksonville, Tampa, Orlando, Miami, West Palm. But insurance is a disaster, right? Like, and we suffer from the same universal rules of real estate than anybody else does.
I love it, man. Hey, you're on a rocket ship. I really like what the company's doing. I'm a believer. I really am. We're very particular of who we have on here. And I really like your tech. I think this is going to help a lot of people make a lot of money. And it's going to help a lot of people find better housing at affordable pricing. It's a huge need on both sides of the equation. I wish you the best of luck. And I hope a ton of our listeners can reach out to you. We're going to throw all your info up on realestatehackers.com. So people can easily reach out if they're interested in joining the platform and talking to you more.
Chad, this is great. I love meeting you. I know we're going to continue to keep in touch and start working together. But
yeah, dude, you're a stud.
This is fun. This is a lot of fun because it's kind of fun to be on the front end of something changing, isn't it?
Oh, man. Nothing is more intoxicating in life than when you're on a rocket ship that, you see the growth, you're solving problems. And look, by the way, this is what real estate is. You are one of a bunch of companies that, tech has not yet really disrupted real estate. I mean, Zillow is not really a disruption. I mean, it was just the beginning. I'm starting to get some data out there. We've got another decade of this, and that's we love talking to your kind of people.
Yeah, like for us right now, if you think about you as an investor, your audience, where are you going? What's a viable option? Like waiting isn't a viable option because everybody will tell you as soon as interest rates go down, here come the sharks.
Oh, yeah. Right? Now, I'm with you, man. I think now's the time to buy. Very opportunistic. Mm-hmm. And I think you can actually find some deals. You can use creative financing. You can assume loans where it makes sense. And realize that at some point in the future, you probably refi out, but that asset won't be available in a couple of years at the same ability to buy because the buyers are right now, the sharks aren't out there, to your point. It's a really interesting time to be a buyer in real estate. We totally agree. So, dude, great. Really awesome talking to you today.
I love it. Thanks, Chad. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. See you, bud. See you, bud.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Real Estate Hackers Show. If you've not yet become a member of Real Estate Hackers, you can do that for free at realestatehackers.com. Get access to all the amazing real estate hacker deals from incredible vendors, a ton of content and materials for you, the investor. You can follow Real Estate Hackers on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. If you can give us a 5-star review for the podcast, I would personally really appreciate it. We read every review, and thank you so much for helping us grow this community for you, the real estate investor.